We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to a Wednesday edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast. Nick Whalen here with Alex Barutha. It is May 3rd. We are still in the early stages of round two, Alex. We had two big games on Tuesday night in the early window. We had game two between the Heat and the Knicks. The Knicks take that one 111-105. In the late window, the Lakers take game one out in Golden State 117-112. You and I were actually together in Madison last night. We had the annual steak dinner for the RotoWire Steak League, which we have referenced and in most cases complained about a number of times over the season. That was the league in which I bought Kawhi Leonard and basically sealed my fate on draft night. But nice to kind of finally put a bow on this fantasy basketball season.
It was. This was, I think, a season where it felt like, you know, the issues that we had felt in terms of players resting, constant injuries, how we set up a league. Should we do daily lineups? Do we do weekly lineups? How big should the starters versus the bench be? It felt like all of that kind of came to a head this year with so many people who are at the bottom of the standings, even the middle of the standings, yourself included. It's just like, what are you supposed to do if you even spend up a little bit on some of these guys?
Yeah, we were talking to some of the RotoWire guys last night, and you know, there were a few, I think, exasperated members of this league who said, look, I'm out next year. I'm just playing best ball. And I totally get that. I think after how this season went, I think, you know, best ball is getting more popular no matter what. But I think, you know, the frustrations that we saw across fantasy basketball, especially in weekly leagues this season, are going to push more and more people toward that. Sorry, I'm distracted for a second. I somehow got on Samuel Dalembert's basketball reference page when I was just trying to bring up the score from last night's Lakers-Warriors game. But anyway, the top 10 finishers in fantasy basketball this year, we're looking at total value 8 category. You can find this, but we have it all broken down really nicely and cleanly on rotowire.com. It's on our ratings page. In order, Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, SGA, Jason Tatum, Domantas Sabonis, Luka Doncic, Anthony Edwards, Donovan Mitchell, Trae Young, Damian Lillard. So factoring in games played, those are your top 10 8 category players this season.
Yeah, I mean, obviously those are all great players, but it just, those are not, like the difference between per game and total is think, bigger than ever. And it's different when you're in a, like, traditional draft, like round by round, serpentine style, versus an auction league or salary cap league. And like next year, it's just, I think in salary cap leagues, the move seriously is just like, do not spend up for anybody that's like a first option that would essentially like cripple your team if they got hurt. Like, it's just better to build a balanced roster and play some waiver wire games only when you have to.
So in general, I agree with that. And that's the strategy that I would typically take in a league like this. But our guy, Tim Schuler, who won the league, you know, he went with a pretty extreme stars and scrubs approach. And he hit on some of the guys who, you know, we thought would be quote unquote scrubs. Like, for example, having KJ Martin, who played almost every game, right, was playing like 30 minutes a game, giving you just like 13, 5, and 2 every single night. You know, shot almost 57% from the field. Like, little pieces like that, you know, over the course of the year certainly help. He had Mike Conley. He had Kevin Porter, who I was just staying so far away from. He actually turned in a pretty decent fantasy year. But, I mean, Tim had three of the biggest buys of the entire salary cap draft, which were KD, Anthony Davis, and Joel Embiid. All of those guys ended up missing significant time, especially KD and AD, and he still won the league.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know. It's in there somewhere if you dig deep enough, but I think being really aggressive on like week one or week two of the waiver wire can help you if you do a stars and scrubs approach. I think you just have to be more aggressive if that's the case, especially like post trade deadline. Like, those are the two biggest waiver wire periods of the entire season, basically after week one and after the deadline. And so if you go with the stars and scrubs approach, those are really important weeks to hit. And that can help you then.
Well, I think it's also important to denote that if you're going stars and scrubs, like, you have to make sure that your stars are capital S stars. You know, you can't be getting like three guys who rank at the 20s. Like, Tim had three of the top seven players in per game value. So even though Davis played 56 games, KD played 47 games, and Embiid played 66 games, I mean, when those guys were on the court, you're getting three of the seven best players in all of fantasy basketball. So in a roundabout way, it's like it felt like those guys missed so much time, but it didn't really matter because they were so dominant when healthy.
Yeah, that's some of it too. You know, I mean, there are plenty of different ways to build. I mean, this is what I love about auction leagues. It's like you can build a team however you want, however you think you're going to win.
Yeah.
Stay really active on the waiver wire, or if you don't want to play the waiver wire game as much, try to build a balanced team. It kind of depends on your preferred style, but clearly both ways can work.
All right, last question before we get to the playoff series. If you're doing a draft right now, or, you know, we don't really expect, you know, a ton to change context-wise between now and August and September when we really start firing up drafts, is Nikola Jokic still the easy 1-1 for you?
I think he is, yeah. Yeah, it's just...
I think so, too. The durability.
Always healthy. Yeah, durability, efficiency. They don't rest him ever. And you know the team is going to be good. So you don't have to worry about any of that.
Yeah, I mean, he played 69 games, which for him is pretty low. That's a career low, in fact. And, you know, they had that calf injury at the end of the year. I never really could tell how real that was. I think if they didn't have the number one seed locked up, I think he probably plays closer to 75 games. And, you know, we're just having that crazy, Iron Man conversation yet again. But pretty amazing that he finishes as the number one player despite taking three fewer field goal attempts per game this season. Like, his scoring went down in a year when everybody else felt like, you know, they boosted their scoring by 5 to 10%. Jokic's counting stats actually got worse. I mean, he went down in terms of rebounds, in terms of points, in terms of blocks and steals. The assists were up slightly, but he's just so solid all around.
So solid, so efficient. And, you know, another thing, if you're drafting him number one, you don't have to worry about like deficiencies. Like, if you draft Giannis, you worry about, you know, free throw percentage, stuff like that. Like, it's not really an issue with Jokic. You're not locking yourself into some sort of team build by drafting Jokic number one.
Yeah, he's the easy 1-1 for me. I think it's actually more interesting to debate who goes number two. You know, it's like I think Embiid is probably the guy value-wise who makes sense, but I just never trust the health. I don't think that's going to get any better as he ages. You know, I think Kevin Durant is in that basket at this point. It's like, it wouldn't be crazy to take SGA number two overall.
No, I don't think so. I mean, he finished number four overall this year in terms of per game value in 8-cat. So, and that was only behind Embiid and Durant, who both obviously have durability issues.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, I think you brought up an interesting point last night when we were kind of talking about this and like how the rest of the playoffs are going to influence. I think it was in the context of, you know, MVP odds for next year, which are going to be really interesting. I think, you know, Doncic is not going to open up as the favorite yet again after how this season went, but it's like, let's say the Lakers, you know, beat the Warriors in five or six games, they go to the finals. All of a sudden, it kind of feels like Anthony Davis is like back in the mix as like, is he a top 10 guy in the league? And, you know, there's always going to be the injury questions with him, but we got to remember, like, when he's healthy, I mean, he was the number one player per game for a lot of this season.
At this point, well, if you're talking, yeah, if you're talking fantasy, I mean, yeah, I think he'll climb back up in people's good graces a little bit again. Not so much an MVP, but I mean, the way he's playing defensively in these playoffs are pretty amazing. So maybe, you know, I think he'll be a little higher up, like defensive player of the year odds than he was to start this year, for example.
Yeah, let's go right to that late game last night. That was certainly the highlight. Lakers-Warriors. I was thinking, you know, during my drive home, I had the game going, listening on the radio, was catching some highlights here and there, you know, at stoplights, things of that nature. And, you know, Davis just had a massive, massive game. It was awesome again on defense. I think he had 4 of the Lakers' 10 blocks as a team, 23 rebounds, 30 points, 5 assists as well. I mean, this was, I would say, arguably Anthony Davis's best two-way game in a Lakers uniform. I mean, he was that dominant, exactly the game they needed from him. And I was kind of thinking, like, it wasn't that long ago that, you know, Anthony Davis versus Giannis versus Embiid, like Towns was in the conversation at that point. Like, he was firmly in the mix of, like, you know, this could be this guy's league, you know, for the next 5 to 10 years. And it is kind of wild how quickly he fell out of that conversation. You know, not only did he continue to get hurt, but it felt like Embiid went up a level, Giannis went up like 2 levels, and they kind of left him behind. But it does feel like these playoffs have been a reminder that, like, AD is in that category when he's healthy.
He is. I think some of the confusion was, like, is AD a 4 or a 5? And I, you know, offensively, I just don't think he's the kind of guy who's aggressive enough to, like, he just ended up not, I don't think he, like, he needed to turn himself more into, like, Giannis or more into, like, a post bruiser guy. And he kind of didn't either, at least offensively. But yeah, he's so versatile on defense. You're seeing it in these playoffs, and I think you know, he's playing at the 5 obviously for the Lakers now, and they, you know, before it was like, okay, we'll play him at the 4. This isn't just with the Lakers, this is throughout his career. We'll play him at the 4 and then we'll have some, like, bigger 5 next to him, like Omer Asik or DeMarcus Cousins. But now I actually think this makes more sense, where they have him at the 5 and then they have, like, kind of that like the hustle defense guy at the 4 in Jared Vanderbilt.
Yeah, Omer Asik, man. I think, didn't he have, like, Crohn's disease or something? He had higher. There was some sort of something like that. Yeah, has not played since 2018.
The NBA regular season has come and gone, which means it's time for a new way to play daily fantasy basketball for the playoffs. Rival Fantasy is the fantasy platform reinventing the way daily and weekly games are played. And they brought 3 new games to the ballpark this year that fantasy players won't find anywhere else. With unique games like Fantasy Bingo, head-to-head player challenges, and over-unders in Fantasy Book, daily fantasy has never been better. Right now, RotoWire listeners can get a $50 protected first play. That means if you win your first play, you keep your winnings. But if you lose your first entry, Rival Fantasy will fully refund you up to $50. Go to play.rivalfantasy.com/signup. Again, that's play.rivalfantasy.com/signup and use our code ROTOWIREMBA, all one word, ROTOWIREMBA. Use that at signup and deposit a minimum of $25 to get your first entry on Rival protected up to $50. Now's the time to step onto the court and become a Rival today. Welcome to the arena.
I thought the Lakers defensively were pretty masterful last night, despite, I mean, Golden State, obviously the plan when you play the Warriors is, hey, don't let Curry and Thompson beat you. And those guys, you know, had, what, 6 3-pointers apiece? Like, the threes were falling for the Warriors all night, really. I mean, they're 21 of 53, just a shade under 40% as a team. Getting Jordan Poole back involved in this game, and, you know, obviously everybody's clowning him for taking that last shot. We could debate the merits of that. But I think if you came in and told the Warriors, hey, after the series he just had against Sacramento, he's going to give you 21 points and 6 threes in game 1, and you're also going to get 12 threes from Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, you would think, okay, we're probably winning this game by 15. So a huge, huge win for the Lakers. I'm not panicking yet if I'm Golden State. I would still pick them to win this series. I think it's going to be really close. But to lose a game where you hit 21 threes as a team is a little alarming.
It is. Again, Looney was great on the offensive boards, but or just on the boards in general. But so was Anthony Davis. You know, they almost, like, canceled each other out on that end. And, you know, Looney and Draymond weren't able to stop AD in the way that they were able to stop Sabonis. And, you know, we touched on this on the fantasy show earlier today on XM, the free throw disparity between these two teams. And part of that's just how they play. You know, the Warriors jack up threes, the Lakers want to bruise inside. But the fact that, you know, the free throw differential is the Lakers are 25 of 29 and the Warriors are 5 of 6. That
crazy.
That basically makes up for the three pointers.
It wasn't one of those games where you felt like, oh man, Golden State's just not getting the whistle. You know, it was that they legitimately drew like three shooting fouls the whole game. Like that's what it felt like. You know, one of them was a Jordan Poole. Like he banked in an and one three. It wasn't that they weren't attacking, but I think the Lakers did just such a good job of smothering any attack. I mean, Steph Curry got blocked a couple times late in the fourth quarter. You know, he would get past Vanderbilt, and then there's Anthony Davis. There's LeBron coming from the weak side. I think LeBron, he's been up and down, I think, as an on-ball defender in these playoffs, but he has been dominant as a help defender. And so has Vanderbilt, and of course, so have Davis. Like, they just have any time somebody catches the ball within 5 feet. I mean, there's three guys that are stretching out trying to block that thing. I thought Vanderbilt was fantastic on Curry. I wondered if he was maybe a little too big, I guess, you know, to kind of be snaky through all these screens. But I think the length, you know, really, really bothered Steph, even though Curry ended up having a decent game. I think he'll take 6 of 13 from Steph at home in a spot like this. He had 5 turnovers, got a little messy late. And I think Vanderbilt was a big part of that. Dennis Schroeder gave the Lakers a really nice game. You can't always count on that. But man, I think I'm really surprised. You and I talked about this previewing it on the XM NBA show last night. I was all over the Warriors. I really thought they had kind of solved something in that round one series against the Kings. I thought they would carry over that momentum. I thought we'd see the Lakers get off to a slow start, which they did, by the way. It was like a 13-2 game early on. The Lakers had their classic cold start. I'm really surprised. I mean, LA, I wouldn't say they dominated this game, but I mean, they were up 14 points midway through the fourth before Golden State went on that late run.
Right. Yes. Aside from the sort of early jump start of Golden State, which isn't that surprising that they came out and kind of blitzed early. It felt like LA was relatively in control of this game, or at least, you know, they weren't losing control of it until Golden State made a run late, obviously. But the Lakers, it's funny because they're able to sort of morph the dynamic of their team in a way that I'm kind of surprised. Like, you know, AD was in round one, had some pretty bad games, was having like trouble with Xavier Tillman. It was just like a huge Austin Reeves series. And then in game one of this series, AD's amazing as one of his best playoff performances of all time. And then Austin Reeves is practically invisible on offense, right? It's a lot more D'Lo. It's a lot more, you know, Schroeder had some stuff going. Hachimura didn't like do anything at all in this game. So the Lakers sort of versatility and the fact that they're kind of able to morph a little bit on offense based on who they're playing is actually really impressive. Like, I wasn't quite expecting it, even though I liked what they did at the deadline.
Yeah, and you mentioned the free throws. I mean, not only did they take 29, but they hit 25 of them. I mean, AD, 8 of 8 at the line. Dennis Schroeder, 9 of 10. LeBron, even 3 of 4. Jared Vanderbilt, 3 of 4. You know, both of those guys aren't great shooters. So we'll see how sustainable that is. I mean, obviously, Dennis Schroeder isn't getting to the line 10 times every game in this series. Right. But I think another somewhat concerning thing for the Warriors is this was not a great LeBron game by any means. I think he was just fine. 9 of 24 from the field, 1 of 8 from three. The three-point shooting continues to be just a complete disaster for LeBron in these playoffs. I think he's, 9 of 49? And I don't know. I've looked this up too many times. I can't keep doing it. D'Angelo Russell played well, but, you know, he's 1 of 5 from three. Lakers were 6 of 25 from downtown in this game. So, you know, the Warriors probably regressed a little bit. As great of a three-point shooting team as they are, they're not going to average 21 makes from three in this series. And, you know, this kind of felt like rock bottom for the Lakers shooting. Not that LeBron is going to suddenly come back to 40%, but you can't count on the Lakers going 6 of 25 every night.
You almost have to talk about the Lakers shooting numbers from three and then just, like, delete LeBron's shooting from it when you're talking about it, because he's addicted
to taking these threes. I don't understand it.
He is. But I do think he was better at cutting off of those. Like, a lot of times, I brought this to you up on the show, like, in the regular season, he's standing out on the wing. He's kind of by himself. The ball swings to him, and he either takes that three, or for some reason, he, like, waits for the defender to come over and then, like, tries to pump fake jab step, and then you lose the advantage. I thought he did a really good job of cutting into that open space, getting the ball, and then either finishing at the basket. And he made some really strong plays at the basket. Like there was, this one wasn't off of a cut, but he posted up Clay and went with one of the like most bully ball post LeBron moves I've ever seen on him. Went up with like the left hand. So I thought he was good at that. And if he keeps doing that in this series, I think that'll be really good. And you mentioned it. It wasn't a dominant LeBron game, but he felt like he understood what was happening on both sides of the ball and that he was really affecting the game.
Yeah, it does feel like this is a little bit anecdotal, but he doesn't love posting up, you know, getting that physical unless he has to. And it feels like the deeper we get into the playoffs, historically, that's when LeBron will start pulling that out. And yeah, you're right. I know exactly the play you're talking about where he just went right around Clay for a layup. But there's still something just a little off with LeBron, like late in the game. You know, I think there's like 2 or 3 minutes left, and you know, he gets a long carom on a rebound and basically has like a one-on-one fast break situation and ends up traveling, you know. And it's like we saw that a couple times against Memphis too, where he would just like fall down on a fast break, or it looked like he would have a layup, then he'd pass out at the last second. Like there's still something that's just like a little bit off with his timing.
Yeah, it's hard with LeBron because he never looks like he's playing hurt. Like he's never limping around.
Right.
He's never like grabbing at the foot or anything like that. It's just those moments you see where it's something you wouldn't expect. It's like a small kind of blip.
Yeah. Yeah. Very clean game, by the way. Only 8 turnovers for both teams. Mm-hmm. Lakers had 6 in the first half, only 2 turnovers in the second, you know, one of those being that late LeBron travel. So really, really fun game to watch. That's for sure. We look forward to game 2 of that series from San Francisco tomorrow night. That'll be a 9 p.m. Eastern tip off.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's go to the other game yesterday. We didn't get to catch this one live because we, of course, were in the bunker at the steak dinner, but we get the Knicks winning this one 111-105. No Jimmy Butler for Miami. Basically turned this into a must win for the Knicks, but even with Randall back, even with Jalen Brunson playing, he was questionable coming in. Got a great game, really, out of both of those guys. This was still, I felt like, much closer than it should have been.
Well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, Knicks were 10-11-point favorites, basically, at home, which is understandable, you know, because the Heat are pulling out a lineup of like Adebayo, Kevin Love, Caleb Martin, Gabe Vincent, and Max Strus. And, you know, I just, again, I didn't feel like Adebayo took over in the way I thought he might or the way I would hope. It just ended up being like there's just a lot of Gabe Vincent threes, a lot of Max Strus. I actually thought Max Strus was excellent getting to the rim in this game, driving to the bucket, which was kind of bizarre. But they, you know, Spoelstra knows, like, if Jimmy's not in the game, our hope on offense, we just have to get threes up. We have to drop a bunch of plays to get open threes. We have to take semi-contested threes. We cannot be like searching around for the best possible shot because we just don't have those kind of playmakers out there. So we got to just set ourselves up and get open threes up. And, defensively, I mean, a lot of these guys are on the Heat in the first place and are in the rotation because they try on defense and are good at that end of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, the Heat got up 49 threes in this game. You're spot on about that. I think this was the strategy even dating back to the Bucks series after they lost Tyler Hero. I think they needed to find advantages. And, the Knicks took 40 threes. They hit 16 of them. So it didn't really end up being that big of an edge for the Miami Heat. But I think given the circumstances, I mean, you got to feel pretty encouraged about how they played. You'd like to see a little bit more out of Bam. I mean, taking 10 shots in 38 minutes as essentially the de facto number one option, I think is pretty disappointing. But we saw aggressive Caleb Martin, aggressive Gabe Vincent, took 12 threes. Max Strus, like you said, played well. One thing on the other side, Emmanuel Quickley, who was so good for the Knicks down the stretch, was not great in round one, played only 9 minutes off the bench in this game.
Yeah, I kind of forgot he existed, to be honest with you, when I when I went back and watched this game. He wasn't out there for very long. His problem is he's not a great three-point shooter. You know, he provides great defense, obviously. He's, as his name would imply, he's very quick. But the Heat are doing, they're very intentionally trying to get the ball out of Brunson's hands and put it in the hands of guys who are not great playmakers and who are not great three-point shooters. I thought Barrett was good again. You know, Barrett kind of has to be that guy when they're forcing the ball out of Brunson's hands. Randall was kind of hit or miss. Quickly just has not been a factor in these playoffs. I hate to say it.
No, he hasn't. He would have got my sixth man of the year vote, but has looked a little overwhelmed so far. Knicks bench didn't really give them anything in this game. Quentin Grimes played 26 minutes, took only three shots. If you look at the series line right now, Miami's still favored to win the series. They're minus 115. Both teams are in minus territory, though. That's when you know it's close. Knicks are minus 105. Do you have any sort of lean here? I mean, without really knowing the status of Jimmy Butler?
Well, I will say when the Knicks were plus money yesterday before this game, like plus 115 or plus 105 or something like that. And if you had made me then take the line, I would have taken Knicks. I was actually kind of surprised they were underdogs despite losing game one. The Knicks obviously have more talent. I don't think that's a question, but what Spoelstra continues to prove as a coach and what so many of these guys on the Heat continue to prove as players who can kind of change their roles and step up when needed, it's just hard to bet against Miami as much. I don't think they're the better team. And again, I would favor New York to win this series, but I just don't want to bet against this team. I don't want to bet against Spoelstra.
This sounds a little counterintuitive, but I feel worse about the Knicks after last night's game that they won. You know, it's like they won that game by 20, like they should have, you know, then I'd be like, all right, maybe the Knicks are back here. But the fact that this was still very much in the balance late into the fourth quarter with this ragtag Heat team, I think says a lot. I mean, the Knicks are they kind of play it down to their competition. Like they did not play well in game one. Cleveland was just so bad, so bad. I think they got outcoached there. And I don't know if the coaching difference is that huge between Tibbs and Spo, but I mean, Spoelstra has just put on a masterclass so far. I don't think there are many coaches who could get this far, even emerge from round one, given the opponent they were facing with all the injuries that they've had. Going back to Miami, long break now. Game three is not until Saturday. I would be shocked if we don't see Jimmy Butler back for that one.
Same here. I think it seemed like if he absolutely needed to, maybe could have played in game two here, and that the medical staff just kind of advised him not to, or since they stole game one, were comfortable sitting him. But you're right about the Knicks winning this game and me kind of feeling worse about them, because they had Randall in this game. In game one, they didn't have Randall. So you're like, well, you know, you can understand losing that one, but you get Randall back in this game and you still, like, it's not decisive. Like you said, until the very end of this game, the Knicks pulled away, and I didn't really feel like they pulled away in a convincing way either. It was a lot of good shot making down the stretch, and that was that. So I I actually have not checked the line. I mean, Miami has to be favored in this home
game,
right?
Well, that's a great question. I was just going to ask you, what's your prediction? I do have a line for Saturday.
I would guess like minus 3.
There we go. Right on the dot. Heat minus 3.
Oh, wow.
Total 208.5.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the total makes sense. They're hovering around that. But yeah, I mean, Heat, I would expect them to win game 3. I don't know. It's weird because I kind of think the Knicks should win the series, but I anticipate the Heat going up 2-1.
I think the Heat are winning the series. I do. I've been pretty convinced these last two games. I think they feel like, all right, we got past Milwaukee, and you know, I don't think they have anywhere near as much respect for the Knicks as they do the Bucks. And I think if Jimmy Butler plays last night, they're probably up 2-0, and it feels like this series is halfway to being over already. We get Sixers Celtics tonight. We won't go like super, super deep on this game just because, you know, it tips off in like 4.5 hours, but Embiid officially the MVP. No surprise there. It sounds like I couldn't find an actual video of this, but it sounds like he privately told teammates that he's back, as in he's playing in game two after the MVP announcement. I don't know if that's the greatest idea. I mean, it didn't really seem 2 days ago like he was overly close to playing in game one. Very, very risky here. But I do see both sides. I think it's easy for us as fans or analysts to be like, oh, you got the one you need. Like, just punt game two. Like, I don't know. Like, if it's the team I'm rooting for, I would. If you have any chance to go up 2-0, I think you have to try to seize that.
Yeah, you mentioned there was a report from Shams, told Sixers teammates, "I'm back, set to return from LCL sprain tonight's game two." So I'm going to assume he's in. Yeah,
would he have played if he didn't win MVP?
Yeah, he's like,
we can't give everybody voters remorse. I have to be out there. Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, you have conflicting feelings about this because on one hand you could go like the Heat route. You could say, well, we stole one, so let's rest him. But the 76ers might be thinking the opposite way. Like, there are some teams that are going to be like, well, we stole one, let's put Embiid out there and try to go up 2-0 on the Celtics. And then we go back home up 2-0. Which I also get that mentality. The difference is that, like, Jimmy Butler sprained his ankle and Joel Embiid has a grade 2 LCL sprain in his knee.
Right.
Like, they're very different injuries in terms of, like, severity and style.
Exactly. Exactly right. And, you know, we're talking about a, you know, 6'7" wing and a 7'2", you know, 300-pound big man. So I see it from both sides. I mean, the line right now, as we record mid-afternoon, is still hanging around Celtics 7.5, Celtics 8. To me, that implies that there's still some unknown with Embiid. I think if Embiid is ruled in, that line probably moves to what, Celtics like 4.5, 5?
Depends if the books think he's actually healthy.
You know, the chance always remains. He gives it 6 minutes and he's like, it just doesn't feel right and they can't do it.
Right. I would go under 24.5 points for Embiid tonight. I think that's a safe play. You know, it's totally possible that, you know, he comes back and looks like himself. But I think there's, you know, for one, you know, these player props are basically 50-50 anyway. And then if you're factoring in, say, a 10 to 20% chance that he doesn't look like himself, or a 5 to 10% chance that he doesn't even make it through the game, at that point, I feel like it's at least a safer play to go under.
It's a safer play to go under. My only reservation would be that if you're the Celtics, obviously Embiid is hobbled here. Do you do everything you can to try to have him be a scorer, you know, like play him one-on-one, play him straight up, basically try to make him do as much work as possible.
And try to do it on that knee. Yeah. I don't dislike that strategy at all. We've seen teams kind of take that approach with Embiid in the past, right? I want to say it was just last playoffs. You know, who did they face in the first round? I'm trying to bring it up. Toronto, and then Miami. I feel like there's been teams that have basically been like, all right, we're gonna let Joel get his 35 and 12, but if we limit Tyrese Maxey, if we limit James Harden, if we limit Tobias Harris to some degree, then we'll be fine. So yeah, if I'm Boston, I would invite him, like, hey, prove to us that knee is healthy.
Yeah, 100%. And so, I mean, again, I think I would also lean under on that player prop because, you know, again, the chance that he just is not able to complete the game, essentially. But I think if you're Boston, you want him to do as much work as possible. So we'll see how both sides kind of interpret what's going on with him.
All right, I'm going to throw out some finals MVP odds and just kind of gauge some things here. Would you rather bet Jokic at +475, LeBron at 7-1, Curry at 8-1, or Anthony Davis at 11-1?
I think Jokic. Yeah, I think Jokic, even with the shorter odds. With the Lakers, there's always a chance AD wins it. You never know. I think I'm just most convinced that the Nuggets are going to the finals at this point. I still think there's a chance Phoenix pulls through here, but without Chris Paul for the next week, that's tough, man. That's really tough.
Really, really tough. I mean, in terms of the odds, I'll just, for one, if the Nuggets win the title, there's 0% chance that it's not Jokic. You know, I guess maybe you could make a case for Murray. He would have to have like multiple 40-point games. Because it's like, even when Murray goes off for like 42 with 7 threes, then you look at Jokic and it's like, oh, he had a quiet 31 and 17. It's like, I just don't see a world in which Jokic wouldn't win it. If you think Denver's winning the finals, LeBron versus AD is suddenly really interesting because AD has very clearly been the better player so far in the playoffs. But I think if you're projecting out and saying, okay, if they somehow make it all the way to the finals, that means LeBron is playing really well. And obviously he's going to save his best for last. And there's also just like pressure, I think, to give it to LeBron. I think he would get the 38-year-old father of three treatment. That would probably push a lot of votes his way. Obviously Curry, if you're still a believer in the Warriors at 8-1, there's some value there. But I'm with you. I still think getting Jokic at like 5-1 at this point is a pretty good bet, especially considering that they're now in a really, really good spot, not only to win the series, but I think Denver, looking at both the Lakers and the Warriors, I think Denver has to feel like, all right, if we can get past Phoenix, we could be looking at a pretty advantageous matchup in which we're maybe not super heavy favorites, but they will be favored, I think, against either Golden State or the Lakers.
And they could end up being like the most rested team. They should be the most rested team out of whoever they end up playing. And I just think if you put the way it looks right now, it looks like it's going to be Nuggets Celtics in the NBA finals. And I would have more confidence in the Nuggets at this point. They have proven way more to me than the Celtics have, who kind of came unraveled a little bit towards the end of that Atlanta series and then dropped game one to Philly without Embiid.
The Nuggets have had like no concerns so far. I know they dropped one to Minnesota, but it was not, it wasn't one of those like what is going on here games. It was just kind of the classic one seed is a little bored first round game that you see like 75% of the time. Whereas like, I mean, Boston, has blown multiple games against Atlanta. They look terrible without Embiid in game one. Like they've had some significant concerns. And I still think Boston is the team that has the best chance to come out of the East, and all the odds would reflect that as well. But I don't know if I would think the same if Milwaukee was still sitting there as a potential opponent in the ECF. And I think I would think differently too if this Embiid injury wasn't a part of the calculation. If this was the Sixers at full strength and Boston lost game one, I still feel so good about their chances just because I don't trust Embiid. But I don't know. They have not been convincing at all.
No, they haven't been. And I think, especially what we saw like out of Horford just getting absolutely torched by Harden, and the 76ers seeking out like Jaylen Brown, Al Horford actions was kind of telling and might be a hint of like maybe the Celtics have some more weaknesses than we thought. Which I think something Atlanta found as well. But like you mentioned it, yeah, the game Nuggets dropped against the Timberwolves kind of felt like they just got lazy like on defense in the third and fourth quarter, and the game just got away from them. But this happens to team all the time, teams all the time, like they drop one game. It's a 5-game series, but it really is a sweep essentially.
Yeah. And they still have like three chances to win that game late and just kind of have some fluky things happen. So I don't hold that against them at all. You brought up the Chris Paul thing. That feels like that was just like really quiet news last night. They just snuck that in while all these other games were going on. It sounds like almost certainly he'll miss games 3, 4, and 5. If there is a game 5, the series could be over as soon as Sunday. That's when we get game 4. Terrible news for the Suns. Not necessarily because Chris Paul is, you know, you're now losing his 9.5 points and 5.5 assists per game. But the drop off from Chris Paul to whoever else is absorbing those minutes is that to me is where the concern comes in.
Well, yeah, this team has no bench. That's what we've been, you know, that was kind of the casualty of the Durant trade. It's what's kind of hindered them throughout these playoffs so far, in addition to just 0 3-point shooting whatsoever. And you lose Chris Paul, you lose the floor general. You know, he hasn't done a great job in Jamal Murray, but you're bringing in Campaign, who, you know, he's been injured a huge chunk of the year, has not looked good at the very minimal time he's playing in these playoffs. And even if you want to say, hey, look, okay, we'll play Devin Booker at point guard, we'll have him run all these actions, well, then you need another wing out there. And then you're bringing out like a wing rotation of like Craig and Okogie next to Durant and Ayton. And it's like, that team isn't, that's not like a cohesive team.
I mean, Cameron Payne has been a disaster so far. I think he kind of attempted to have like a Cameron Payne game in game two, and that was shut down promptly. The solution now is, I guess, he just has to play like 25 minutes. You know, as you said, it's like, all right, do you reintroduce Landry Shamet into the rotation after he was kicked out of the rotation because he was so bad in game one? You know, the other options are basically like five guys who do the same thing. Okogie, yes. Craig, Damian Lee, Wainwright, Terrence Ross, all those guys are so redundant. None of those guys can really give you anything as a creator.
No, and yeah, I mean, there's going to be probably an alarming amount of Okogie, Craig, Wainwright minutes potentially in this series. And every moment for DeAndre Ayton should be a big moment because he's part of a team that should be able to win the title. And he looked pretty bad in game one, was a little improved in game two. But these are the exact moments that like you have DeAndre Ayton for. It's like, hey, man, you're normally our fourth option. Now you're our third option. We got to run more actions with you. You got to be better on both ends of the floor here. So I think a lot of focus should be on him as well. Like he's got to step up.
You mean DeAndre dominating? Yeah, he does need to step up. Why? We'll close on this. Why are the Suns 3.5 point favorites on Friday? I know they're at home. I know they have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. But given everything we just talked about, I think with no Chris Paul, I'm surprised. I thought this would be I could see Phoenix like -1, 1.5. But I think this could be a pick'em.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think, I don't know, maybe the books just don't think Chris Paul's out there doing that much. But to me, that doesn't even make sense. Like, I don't know. I still think he's like, you need him out there to, like, he's just so valuable. I don't know. I would take Nuggets +3.5 here.
I guess Denver was not a great road team, but nobody really was this year. It's like Philly, Boston, and Milwaukee were pretty good on the road, and that's about it. I mean, Denver is 20-23, and that's like the eighth best road record in the NBA. So I don't know that I really hold that against them. I mean, if you're the Suns, like what is the game plan now? Like, is it as simple as like, all right, Booker, KD, like we might need 40 plus out of both of you.
They needed that before, didn't they? Because Chris Paul's giving you like 8 points. So I don't know. I think
they have to outscore the Nuggets too. I mean, game two was a really weird one. You know, like that was what it was, like 97-87. Is that what the final was? Like, that's just not how the series is going to go.
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, because it's weird because, I mean, Chris Paul was setting guys up and running pick and roll and stuff, but that was more so with Ayton. And then those actions kind of got KD and Booker some looks, although I felt like KD was forcing threes the other night, banked in one of his two made threes out of his 12 attempts. In addition to being a big DeAndre Ayton spot, this is a huge Monty Williams spot. Like, what are you going to draw up without Chris Paul out there?
Yeah, it did feel like there was a little whiff of, oh, you want us to shoot more threes? All right, I'll shoot more threes from KD. And it did not go well. There was just a really weird offensive game for both teams. Like, neither team ever felt like they were in rhythm for more than like 2 minutes at a time.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think game one was, there was some hot shooting from the Nuggets, and I felt like the Suns were making some obvious mistakes, and then both things kind of regressed at once. Like, the Suns corrected what they did wrong, and then the Nuggets shooting cooled off, and that resulted in just like a sloppy, low scoring game, which is not how the series like kind of projects out.
All right, man, we'll wrap this thing up. Like we said, we just have the one game on the slate tonight, Sixers Celtics. That is a 8 p.m. Eastern tip off. You can hear us on NBA Radio Channel 86. The rest of the week, including tonight, we'll be live at 7 p.m. Eastern. We'll be talking best bets for Sixers Celtics. We'll be joined by Noah Levick tonight. Looking forward to chatting with him. We got another one gamer on Thursday, tomorrow, Lakers Warriors. You can catch us on NBA Radio previewing that. And then on Friday, we'll be doing the gambling preview for game three between the Celtics and the Sixers, as well as game three between the Nuggets and the Suns.